And right after that, they called and said I needed to cancel my day off. I already bought tickets too. You know, normally when I'm this screwed, it comes after three too many drinks and a night at the Mahjong table.
Last one of these had hundreds of theft reports, all within 2 hours of the start time.
Well, maybe I'm the asshole, but I can't find a ton of sympathy for a bunch of gazers too busy staring up to notice a hand in their bag. And have some avvy celebrity coming in too? Some kind of sick joke.
Glad you're finding humor in it. I was going to put us in for a double.
Hey, Cole. Fuck you.
Look, let's just finish up here so I can actually get some sleep tonight.
All of this. It's just bullshit, though. When I made Inspector, they told me straight up, 4 shifts a week, mostly casework. But now, half the month, I'm back out with a uniform on, asking some kid to very nicely please hand back the wallet they took. And when they had the nerve to send me one of those surveys anyway...
Hey, Parker. Don't move, okay? This is Cole. I'm down at the Randolph 14th floor. We're going to need EOD here right away. And let the chief know we really need to cancel this Sarek thing. There's something going on here.
Welcome to World's Way, an actual play storytelling podcast. I'm your game master, John Ossop, and with me today, we've got Haley Daria.
Hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
Front flaps.
Michael Morales.
What?
Sorry. I was just trying to keep going. I don't even know what to say. Michael Morales.
No, I think my original response was fine.
And Moshe Dara.
Hi, everyone.
All right. So I would like to pick back up maybe a minute or two after we last left off. And so we see Arno sitting next to Morris Shaw, director of the Minerva Project, who has now moved to your side of a bench in the park on Ascension Station. And in your hand, Arno, is the piece of paper that you pulled out of the dead drop. The person picking these up, she's just the go-between. My friend, on the other hand, they're someone I met working on the armistice. Did what they needed to do to work their way up through Aventine's diplomatic corps. But during the negotiations, we found a mutual interest in trying to find some way to keep the peace. Early in our relationship, we had the stupid idea to come up with code words. For their part, they picked the name Scion. Never asked them why. But anyway, Scion and I, we have a sort of mutual understanding, a back channel to help calm things down, try to prevent misunderstandings. I share some of what we know, and they do the same for us. Through that, we've been able to stay one step ahead of things, keep the hawks in our camps from doing anything that the rest of us will regret.
Who was the baker?
Another mutual friend. Someone who's meant to keep an eye on things down there for Scion. When I asked you to get the Canalay, I just wanted you to check in on him, ideally bring back an intact box of baked goods as well. He knew I absolutely hated those gift boxes. Found them gaudy as hell. I always insisted that he wrap them up plain for me. When I saw that gift box, I knew that something must have been wrong. And that was before he told me he'd been arrested.
Do you normally consort with Aventine spies?
The descriptions in the news of him being part of a Aventine spy ring, I'm not sure how much I fully give that credit. As I said, he's there looking out for things on behalf of Scion, but I'm not going to deny that things can get messy when you're trying to find some way to keep the peace.
Why should I trust anything that you're telling me right now?
Well, Arno, it looks like you have all the goods that you can get on me already, and I'm not sure how much lying to you could possibly get. In terms of this situation, I'm not saying I was the best person for this, or even the only person, but I was the right guy in the right place at the right time, and these kind of coincidences, it's just a fact. When we started the armistice talks, almost everyone else in the Verge was a holdover in uniform, thought that fighting a war was the only way to make peace. As for me, I tried to take a different tack, and whether you trust me in that or not, I suppose that's up to you.
Are you taking orders from anyone, or is this a vigilante side hustle?
The president knows that I've made connections during the armistice. She knows I've been able to help keep the peace when more traditional channels have fallen short. But I'll admit that I've otherwise avoided saddling her with any details that could make this messy if things got out. Not sure I would describe this as a vigilante side hustle, though. I'd say that's a bit more theatric than is my style.
That was a cute way of putting it. Avoiding all accountability. Being able to go off and talk to who you want, when you want, and letting other people clean up the messes.
I'm not sure that I agree with you that I've left any messes for others to clean up. In terms of the aftermath of the war, well, I think it's been myself and those on the other side like Sihan who have been straddled with that responsibility.
How much of what we've discovered is actually a surprise to you? Do you spend your time sitting behind that desk thinking about how you're going to look surprised whenever we come in with a new piece of evidence showing hardware from Aventine that you knew was planted in those mines?
The discovery that Dr. Sen made on Earth and these anomalies in the Verge, they were just as much a surprise to me as they were when you first heard of this. With respect to your theory of Aventine's involvement, I'll admit that I'm becoming more open to that concept. In terms of what Scion's told me, their take was that there's no way that Aventine could have built tech for some kind of weapon that targets Lustra, not when everything else there is held together with shoestrings and bubblegum. But I'm not going to deny where the evidence seems to be pointing.
How much does the information that Scion gives you impact our destinations for these missions?
So far, not at all. But if I got a lead, a good one, I'm not going to deny that I'd try to follow it.
Does Scion know where we go before we go?
They know when there's something we're looking into, but I've tried to be not exactly forthcoming with all the details, and that includes your travel itinerary. That said, it's not exactly a secret when the Valiant shows up somewhere.
So what now? What's your end game?
Look, Arno, I know that. And as he says that, actually, Shaw's slate starts beeping. And he kind of pulls it out of his pocket and makes a few taps before a small frown appears on his face. But then after a second, he puts it away and turns back to you. I guess we're going to need to cut this a bit shorter than I'd like. There may actually be another job in store for us. Now, in terms of the end game, Arno, it seems that you have a choice to make. You could pass along what I've told you to whoever sent you here to spy on me. And in that case, I'm guessing that the four of you will be working for someone else real soon. Or you could keep this to yourself, pretend we never had this conversation, and then maybe we could start working together for all of humanity instead of just playing for our own teams. You see, I'm too old to beg, Arno, and I'm not going to feed Sion to the wolves on their side of the fence. So I suppose this one's just going to have to be in your hands. But, oh hell. Just know that what we've done here has kept the peace so far. And when everyone else is busy looking for a way to win, maybe that's the best we can get. And at that point, he stands up from the bench and starts walking back toward the transit station.
Wait.
He kind of pauses and turns around.
I don't care if you beg, but are you willing to make a trade?
As I said, I'm not willing to feed Sion to the wolves, but if you have something else in mind, I'm willing to be reasonable.
I want my unit stationed outside of that room. They don't need access, but I will need to make sure that that device doesn't leave the compound under any circumstances.
He takes several steps back toward you, and he says, Arno, you know that trust in the fleet is something that I am personally lacking. Are you sure that putting some troops outside the door inside the Minerva Project building, are you sure that they're going to be people who you can control?
No more certain than you can trust that Sion can keep Aventine's forces at bay. We're both going to have to get a little uncomfortable to keep everyone in their corners for now.
He kind of puts his hands in his pocket and kind of like shifts his weight from side to side, looking uncomfortable. And he says, well, it doesn't seem you've left me much of a choice, Arno. You can have your guards, and I'll see you back at the briefing.
Take care, Director.
Does Arno do anything else before the briefing at this point, or do you head straight there?
I think Arno makes a stop to drop off the message that he had collected, and then makes his way over to the briefing.
Okay. So Mara, as a brief shot, I think that you're in the room with the device that you found on Feronia when we see a message on your slate calling for everyone to meet in the briefing room. But before I get into anything else, do you want to describe what the room looks like or maybe the equipment that you've set up there?
Yeah. So
Google's flow cytometer.
Yeah. No, I well, that's the problem, right? Is that like Lauren, in her knowledge of scientific equipment, this isn't very useful here. So I think looking around, it's not as neat and tidy as images that might be conjured from what people see in kind of modern science fiction. Because this is like ad hoc, there's maybe like open panels with wires and tubes coming out that have been wrapped together into, you know, monitors and, you know, physical servers and stuff, maybe like laptops. Again, this would look maybe a bit old fashioned, but kind of is necessary to generate this mobile, highly powered and reinforced kind of the ThinkPad-esque Nokia phone version of the like equipment that she needs to analyze the output and, you know, circuitry mechanisms, hack and crack, whatever needs to happen. Yeah. So it's definitely more electronics based than there is biological stuff.
Yeah. I kind of like, it seems like there's kind of like a juxtaposition of like very high tech equipment, but also kind of shoestringed together to fit the space and come into there quickly.
Because it was like a storage closet before. So I think there's a lot of like, she had to open up panels.
Yeah.
Is it the spaceship equivalent of stringing multiple power strips in a line.
Yeah. It, again, like there are like bundles of wires coming out of walls where it was just a flat panel before.
So at this point, and this is in the version of the research lab that's on Ascension, that's in the Minerva HQ. Yeah. But we see that the device is partially disassembled. And inside it, I think you've been able to disconnect what you think is the power source. And currently, with all the equipment that you have set up, I think we're seeing a kind of like imaging device going through and taking various slices of the layers of the electronics inside the device. So kind of taking a, mm-hmm. like almost like a CAT scan or something like that, but taking different images of the layers of this electronics and running an analysis both of what specifically it does and also who might have built this thing. But with the device opened up, I think I can give you one additional piece of information right now, just from your taking this thing apart. Inside the device, several of the components were marked with the same Greek letter and numbers that you saw on the crate, and that was Xi 322. But at the heart of this device, you found a short, round component, almost like a cylinder with the ends rounded off. This component, it's almost entirely smooth metal. But on one of the sides, you found a smudge that looks like extremely faded writing, maybe with a wax pencil. And using your equipment, I think you've been able to make out what it says. But instead of any more letters or numbers, you're able to make out the word clarity. How does Mara react to this?
I think she probably just lets out like an irritated puff because the word clarity feels like it's mocking her at this point. Yeah. Because nothing is clear. But I think after that explosion of emotion from Mara, she probably like composes herself and realizes that it's a promise of what this piece of equipment is going to afford her.
So I think at this point we cut to the rest of you either already waiting in or arriving at the Minerva Project briefing room. Is there any kind of conversation happening inside, or what does that look like?
I think it makes sense that Mara has a picture of what she discovered from the object up, and she's like maybe showing whoever's standing there or is interested, and she's like, I haven't been able to figure out anything about what the mechanism does, however I did find this piece of information.
I think Leela's just nodding along interestedly with interest, but without really much to contribute, because this is all
there's nothing
far
to
from her. Yeah.
And so maybe at that point, Arno, maybe you walk in having finished sort of dropping your stuff off and recomposing yourself for this. And I think a minute or two behind you, we see Director Shaw and Deputy Director Green walk into the room. Sasha Green, for her part, has a mostly neutral expression, but Shaw looks unmistakably frustrated or upset. But as he walks into the room and sees the four of you, his expression kind of shifts in a way that at least you, Nasir, are very familiar with. Mm-hmm. And he kind of walks up to the front of the room and says, sorry for the short notice, folks. Needless to say, I'm not thrilled about sending you off so soon for another field trip, but as you'll see in a moment, we didn't have much of a choice on this one. Before I get into it, though, Dr. Bulova, do you have any updates on your progress for us?
Unfortunately, nothing yet. I was just showing everyone a small tidbit of information that the object revealed. And she's going to kind of maybe just flip over her slate and show him clarity.
Yeah.
It will still be a little bit of time before I can make any true progress.
Understood, and keep up the good work, Doctor. I should say I've been rethinking some of the proposals regarding the security for the object, and after discussing the matter with Lieutenant Hines, I've agreed to allow a couple of the fleet's marines inside the building here to stand guard. They'll only remain outside of that room, but given the risks associated with this device, I'd say we can't be too careful. And so with that, I think he taps on his slate a few times, and we see a star map kind of come up on the screen behind him. And he says, Eos 2A is the only planet we're on in the Verge that isn't really a planet. See, Eos is a moon orbiting one of the four gas giants in that system. Every few months, the orbits line up for the planet to block out the sun. And over the last few decades that we've been there, folks on Eos have taken to calling it the Veil, decided to make some sort of festival out of it. Usually this is just some excuse to throw a party, albeit with a bit more of a free spirit aesthetic. But well, this one's going to be a bit messier. An Aventine philosopher by the name of Reeve Kasarek, one of their heroes of the revolution, has decided to pay them a visit. Sorry, I gotta guess. Lauren gave me such a look. I gotta compose myself.
No, that was Mark. Mark gave you a look. Excuse me. I'm fully in it. I'm sorry. I'm serving.
No, you're good. The planet as a whole generally supports the Republic, but I suppose their support includes a broad interpretation of the freedom of speech. Things were going about as well as you could hope for until 2 days ago, when the local security officials found a bomb planted in what was supposed to be her hotel room. Now, everyone assumed Sarek was going to cancel the speech, but instead, she put out this. And at that point, Shaw taps on his slate again, and the screen changes to reveal a woman, maybe in her mid-40s. She has medium tan skin, sharp features, and wavy black hair falling a few inches below her shoulders. And this video is sort of shaky and cropped compared to the screen. And so it kind of looks like a video that she recorded of herself on her slate. And after a second or two of aligning the camera, she begins and says, I refuse to be silenced by this threat of violence, and I refuse to let extremists stand in the way of a truly independent Verge. If the Republic truly stands for the values of openness and free expression, then I invite them to send the Minerva Project here to Eos to stand by my side and protect me from this threat. If instead you're only willing to defend speech that supports your so-called unity, well, then I guess we know what the Republic's values are really worth. And after that, the video shuts off. And then Shaw says, now, with everything going on, I personally think we have bigger fish to fry back here on Ascension. But President didn't leave me much of a choice. Said your handling this and protecting Sarek was crucial toward our efforts to maintain peace in the Verge.
The President is right. Reeve Kasarek has backed us into a corner. Either we give her the stage alone, without us, to say whatever she would like with the whole of the Verge watching, or we stand by her side and at least tacitly show some degree of approval.
I think Leela's going to speak up and say, what exactly has Reeve Kasarek said that's so objectionable? Is she truly someone we should be scared of sharing a stage with?
There is no person in the galaxy who has demonstrated more capacity for fueling independent thought in the Verge than Reeve Kasarek. Giving her a microphone is the same as giving someone in the fleet a bomb.
I think Leela's going to scoff at that. isn't the point of our mission to be showing... Well, she's going to interrupt herself. Isn't the public objective of our mission to be providing an answer to the question, what will the Republic do for me? If she's the figurehead of the opposition to our message, then we're already trying to oppose her. I don't see what facing her outright does to damage our side.
You misunderstand me, Ms. Malik. I think we absolutely have to go. I don't think she's given us any choice in the matter. To speak candidly, Director Shaw, she outmaneuvered you before you even stepped to the board.
That may be true, but, well, I see this all as a bit of a distraction from what we're really here to do. Sasha and I will be here to keep an eye on things, make sure no one messes with Dr. Belova's collection, but you all should try to get back here as soon as you can. And he kind of looks at you, Arno, but then looks back to the rest of the group and says, supposing that your theory on Aventine's involvement with the Lustra or with this ghost ship is true, maybe your following Reef Kasarik around can help us learn something useful.
John, while he's talking, can I pull out my slate and look through the original anomalies we were briefed on back on Earth?
Yeah, sure.
And see if there was ever an anomaly, even a far-off one, on Eos?
Yeah, you look through and there's not. Which I think that's, you know, maybe is why Shaw is a little pissed.
I think Mara, she's kind of been in listening to this back and forth. And I think she's going to jump in and say, does everything we have to do be wrapped in some sort of galactic espionage tit for tat? This is the first open invitation to have legitimate dialogue with the other side. This is a monumental opportunity. We're here for the galaxy, for peace. This is the first big step for that. That doesn't involve machines placed in minds or spies or lies and falsehoods. Maybe we could view it with a little bit of optimism.
So, okay, before I say Shaw's reaction, I guess, does anyone else react to this?
I think it will be quite the opportunity to see Reef Kasarik speak in person. And I will actually give a sly smile to Mara.
And maybe I'll be pointed, like, what does Arno do when he hears this, too?
I think his expression is neutral. There was always going to be a situation where we were going to go somewhere hostile at some point, and I think this was just sort of inevitable, and probably one of the better ways to be to go to a hostile situation is to be invited to come, even if it's bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as the eyes are on us on this one, it makes it hard for, at least in Arno's mind, someone to take nefarious actions to, like, engage in subterfuge, because that looks bad for Aventine too. So it's just like, you know, I think go along for the ride, but don't really exactly go in there expecting to have, like, a great outcome.
Yeah.
Whatever that might be.
So I think when you say that to Mara, Shaw kind of looks like he's about to object, but then he kind of softens his expression and says, Doctor, maybe you're right, but whatever work that we're doing for peace, helping Evelyn Lee's vision for a united Verge, none of that will happen if we don't stop these anomalies. Take the rest of the day, get whatever you need to prepared, and the Valiant leave for Eos first thing tomorrow morning. So I think as everyone's kind of trickling out of the briefing room, or no, Sasha Green actually walks up to you and she says, as you asked, I looked into Administrator Saeed. Had to call in a favor from someone in station security. Unfortunately, just before the four of you headed to Fronia, it looks like she left Ascension from one of the main docks. And at this point, she hands you a slate. And on it, we see an image that kind of looks like a customs photo of a woman in her 60s with light brown skin and long black hair. The picture matches what's publicly available for Saeed, but the name she gave to board her ship was Shira Khan, a citizen of Aventine, traveling on diplomatic credentials.
Do we know where she was headed?
From the manifest, it looks like it was taking her home to Aventine. After learning this, I started digging more into Saeed, checking her background. It was hard to dig things up from across the verge, but the first real proof I could find of her even existing was from 1 year before the armistice.
I think at that, Arno exhales deeply and looks up at Deputy Director Green and asks, how long were we in contact with her before we agreed to fly out for our mission?
As part of setting up the project, we'd made some preliminary outreach to leadership across the Verge, though our specific request only came with the news of the anomaly occurring there, and that we only learned of just a few days before you left. We didn't have any reason to check on her before, though. She'd been the administrator on Consus for years.
How long was it between Administrator Saeed existing on paper and actually becoming the administrator on Consus?
From the first real proof of her existing, just under 2 years. But it's not like this was an amateur job either. I found records with her name on it dated decades ago, but all of it things that could have been made after the fact or altered. I wish I could have gotten more, but do you think that there's any way to look into what she was up to on Consus? Obviously, we didn't leave on the best terms with LeClaire, but as for Saeed or Khan, all I'm saying is she knew we were coming to look at the mines, and she knew that it would take us 3 weeks to get there from Earth.
But she had no way of knowing that we would suspect that she wasn't who she said she was. Why leave?
Maybe she took something else with her. So at this point, I think you all have some time to get ready or do whatever you're doing on Ascension before the Valiant leaves. So, Haley, maybe I'll start with you. What's Leela doing as she's getting ready for the Valiant to leave?
So I imagine Leela's been putting this off a bit, but she knows that she owes a call to Mickey, her mentor. She just did something kind of wild by connecting with a non-human being. And if nothing else, this is valuable information for the Sato Institute, and she should probably let someone know.
Okay. So maybe we pick up in the conversation and you've kind of described the basics of what happened and we can start there. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And I guess before we jump into this, where is Leela having this conversation? Are you in your room on the Valiant or kind of where are you doing this from?
Yeah, I think her room on the Valiant feels relatively secure and all of that. I don't think this is like top secret or that Leela's particularly worried about surveillance or anything. So,
yeah. So maybe we just see you're like holding your sleeve and we see Mickey's face on it. And
yeah,
I think we hear her say, I'm aware of some practitioners having attempted connection with non-human animals, but nothing like the experience that you've described, Leela. This creature, do you think that it had some kind of profound intelligence, something that would have made the connection possible?
I think Leela's going to kind of shrug and say, I was taught, in fact, it may have been you, Mickey, who said this, that indexing is only possible with humans, and that even attempting connection with other sentient beings is not recommended. I don't know what made this different.
Well, I'd love to hear more about it, but in either case, this must have been very hard for you, Leela. I'm glad that you have colleagues to work with there, or maybe they're even the start to friends. But I'm not sure that they can fully understand what it is that we do and what it means for you.
I think Leela is, I think she raised her eyebrows a little bit when Mickey said on the, you know, at the start of friends.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, I haven't shared with anyone here the enormity of what it means to connect with a non-human being. I don't know that I've really understood it myself. I've been out on the verge for weeks, and I've seen alien plant life and wildlife and geography, but this was the first time anything truly embodied the word alien. It was. And I think she just trails off.
Leela, ever since that first session that we did together, I knew you had potential. And as we worked together, as you succeeded in cases where no one else could, it became clear to me that you were the best student that I had, that you would even surpass me someday. If there's anyone who could break new ground for the Institute, to break new ground with our technique, I know it can be you.
I think Leela shakes her head at that and just says, I'm not extraordinary, Mickey. I'm just one of the first practitioners to even make it out here.
Leela, modesty is certainly a virtue, but there's no cause for you to have self-doubt. In your past, I've seen nothing but extraordinary results. Even thinking back to things that we've done together, like the Isaac Espinoza case, no one else could have handled that, and you were able to get results.
I think at the name Isaac Espinoza, Leela just looks down for a moment, and then she's going to respond. I appreciate your support, Mickey. It means a lot.
Leela, I know you're always trying to do what's best for others and always trying to do the best that you can. But just make sure that when you're doing that math, that you're also including yourself and looking out for all that you will achieve in the future as well.
I think Leela just nods. And I think if we were to look a little closely, we would see a glimmer of wetness in her eyes.
So, okay, that is the conversation with Leela. Lauren, what is Mara up to during this time on Ascension?
So I think pretty obviously she's going to be working on the device. So I think the snapshot would be she's kind of just in her workwear, the futuristic zip-up jumpsuit. The top is down around her waist. She's got a tank top. She's looking un-Mara-like, actually. And she's sitting there reading on Independence.
Oh,
and you can see that the version she has actually has lots of ripped out notes kind of stuffed into it, because Mara would never be the person to write in the margins. And also the book needs to go back in pristine condition. So I think that she's kind of, you know, the device is in the background and she's kind of just sitting there reading, lounging. But you see a message pops up on her slate And she'll open it up. And I think what like the camera version of this is the top message is from like Mara to Nolan, her boss. Mm-hmm. And she says, I can just synthesize it myself if it comes to that. And then the message right below that is, fine, I'll send it. Okay. And then she says, she punches out a thank you and then goes back to reading.
All right. I have no idea what that is, but I guess we'll find out.
You'll have to wait your turn like the rest of us, John.
I know. Oh, I don't know John's if I like getting so plot upset. Twisted
I didn't
here.
Tell him. I didn't tell him. Well, I've been cooking up how it's actually going to go down. So, yeah.
All right.
Secret GM, Lauren Wilbanks.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize I was getting this straight up coup, y'all.
Number one thing John hates, player agency.
Yeah, that's
as we
true.
Have discussed.
It's true. It would be much easier if I could just get you to do what I want. But let me ask. I do want to interrogate one thing about the scene, though. So you said you were like sticking the paper into the like sort of taking notes and putting it in the pages. You know, I mean, I assume that that is very different from how you would approach any other book. I mean, which presumably would be on a slate. And if you wanted to take notes, it would also be on the slate. So like, I guess what was Mara thinking about using the paper to take these notes? I just want to kind of understand that.
Yeah, she's just leaning in. It's like a when in Rome situation. I think that she really took it to heart when Nasir said there were no electronic copies of this. I think she views it as like writing in a classical text.
Yeah.
Even if the physical, well, maybe even the physical book itself, right, is like a quote unquote classic or an early print or whatever. But I think that she will like refuse to take pictures or images of it and write in the margins there. I think she's gonna, she's maybe drinking a little of the Kool-Aid.
Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh.
All right. So if that's what Mara's up to, what is Nasir doing?
So I think Nasir walked back to the Valiant and like into his room, essentially, where nobody was watching. And then as soon as he was clear, no one was watching, though, I think he like dipped out, you know, like sort of took a few trips around the station to make sure he wasn't followed. But I think I don't actually think we catch him after the briefing. I think we catch him the next morning waking up on the couch in Ramon's apartment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Walk of shame.
Mateo's apartment also, of course. Since they're one and the same.
Mateo Ramon. This one goes out to our buddy Rick Schaefer.
Okay. So I think, well, I guess then let me ask this. Like, when Nasir wakes up, what's kind of your reaction or what do we see?
I think at first I wake up and I sort of just stretch and it's like relaxed. And I think it is the most real moment that like I've had. Like, period, since this campaign started, of just like no walls up, youthful Nasir. And then I realize that this is the morning we're fucking leaving. And I start scrambling around the apartment to like get dressed and like be ready to go. I don't think like I'm like naked. I just think like, you know, like I'm starting to grab my coat and like try to like get ready to like head out the door.
Yeah. So I think as you wake up, I think the shot was you're on the couch and then you have this reaction. And Mateo was sitting at the other side of this room at a desk. And I think he was looking at or reading a slate. And then he kind of makes several taps on it as you get up and then puts it away. But he turns and says, sorry, maybe I should have woken you up, but it looked like you needed sleep, Nasir.
It's fine, Mateo, thank you. Thank you for letting me vent. I appreciate it. And thank you for your advice on how to handle Reef Kasarik. I'm not really sure what the best way for us to handle this one is.
I've been thinking about it some more, but this whole thing with Sarek, this idea of a threat, the more I think about it, the more It feels like a trap. There's some half-assed attempt to put a bomb in her room. And then the next thing, she invites the four of you out there personally. How do we know that she's the real target here?
I have to admit, it seemed like a maneuver when I first heard. Who do you think it could be, if not Sarek?
Nasir, you and the other three, you're the most recognizable faces of the Republic and the Verge. If something were to happen to you, if one of you got hurt, I don't see how the truce could hold.
I think at that I'll stop, like moving, and I'll go still. Do you really think she's trying to kill us with the whole Verge watching? That seemed more like Kyros's style.
Maybe it wasn't her idea.
I think at that, the operative in me starts working. You know what I mean? And like, I think if you look at my face, it's like my brow is furrowed and the gears are almost visibly turning. Regardless, I don't really know what choice we have. We have to go.
Maybe you're right. But my advice, Nasir, if you'll take it, keep your distance from her. Keep your distance from the speech. Anything that would put you in her orbit. And what I mean is, you four should be careful out there. Look out for yourselves. But I think that looking at Mateo's face, it's clear to you that when he says he's worried about the four of you and the truce, that that's not what he's really worried about.
I will go in and just put my hand on his shoulder. I'll do my best. We'll stay safe.
I think he just nods, and then I assume you kind of have to run out to make it to the Valiant.
Yeah, I take a quick look, peek around every corner for like a block or two, and then I'm like full sprint.
It's Haley. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the show. Okay, now listen in. The rest of the team is expecting me to tell you to share the podcast with, I don't know, I guess people who would like it or something. And yeah, tell your friends and family. Talk us up at work. Hell, tag us at Worlds Away Pod on social media. But here's what I really want. I want you to share us with someone you think would hate this. You know that person in your life. They get way too into the things that they dislike. They have a critique for everything. That's who I want. Compliments, they're fine. But what I really feed on is the spirit of the haters. Bring them to me. Oh, shoot. Hold on. They're coming back. Hold on. Okay. And you can find us online at worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening. Now, back to the show. Remember what I said. Haters.
So that morning before the Valiant leaves, what is everyone up to in these kind of final moments? Are you all on the ship sort of getting ready, or what does that look like?
Arno is in his quarters, sitting on a chair, facing the door, one leg crossed over his knee, in complete darkness. And he is thinking through everything that he and Shaw discussed and considering what to do next. And it seems obvious to him what he should do next. But the result of that, whatever happens afterwards, is less predictable and not necessarily in his favor. And he's just trying to stare a hole through the wall in that door as he is considering everything that could happen.
What about Leela and Mara?
To clarify, we left the device on Ascension hooked up to that kind of mirrored research room that we set up there.
I think it's just kind of running the analysis, it's like, it's going to do its thing and hopefully have some answers for you when you get back.
Right, totally. So I think that we did discuss how there is like both kind of to make this mechanically work, we have the kind of research station set up in both Ascension and also in a small room on the Valiant. So I think she's probably in there checking the hookups and the links and making sure that she can see results or the process as it's running on Ascension in the Valiant.
Got it. So I think that sort of time is passing and, you know, maybe I'm not sure what the kind of standard time zone is on Ascension Station, but there's kind of no real external change from night to day. But maybe the sort of lights are set up to simulate a kind of day night cycle. But maybe you said you were going to meet up at 9 or 10 a.m. But whatever the time is, I think at first it's 5 minutes past there and then it's 15 minutes past that time and there is no sign of Nasir. What do you all do?
So I think it's kind of interesting if we have a little bit of this like tradition of where we are meeting up and then we're kind of like sitting together as we take off or maybe go on a new mission. So I kind of like the idea of we're all kind of like tapping our fingers, kind of being like, well, where's Nasir?
Okay. Is this like outside the ship or in the wardroom or like where are you all?
I feel like in the wardroom.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask this, Mo. How late does Nasir show up?
I think I show up, I don't think it's more than 20 minutes late. What, right? And I think, unlike Mo, Nasir is mortified at the idea of being 25 minutes or 20 minutes late, 20, 25 minutes late. Mo doesn't actually recognize the difference between 20 and 25 minutes late. Nasir is like, I was 22 minutes and 14 seconds late, and I am going to cry about it. Right? One tear for every second I'm late.
Okay. What does it look like as you come into the wardroom?
I think, despite being in good shape, I hoofed it, right? So, like, I think I sort of burst in, like, slightly below whatever bursting is. Like, I don't, like, kick the door down. But I'm, like, panting, and I'm like, apologies. I didn't see the time. I woke up a little late. And I think I'm wearing black slacks. Like my tan coat and my like fluorescent scarf. And I think this is also probably the first time any of you have seen Nasir repeat an outfit, and it's yesterday's outfit.
Both of Leela's eyebrows go all the way up. And I don't think it's, I just want to be clear, I don't think it's like subtle either. I think she's got like a smirk on her face and she's just kind of like got her eyebrows raised and like got her head kind of tilted, like,
I am so sorry for keeping you all waiting.
Everything all right?
Everything is fine. I just completely lost track of time. And I think I stammer through that.
Since last evening?
Yes, I was engrossed in some Aventine philosophy to try to refresh my memory on some things.
I didn't know we were calling it Aventine philosophy these days, but I think Leela kind of puts her hand over and claps him on the shoulder, and she's like, happy for you.
I'm at a loss for words, and my face is burning red.
Well, but my apologies. They don't have another word for philosophy here, correct?
That's correct, Doctor.
Good. Oh, I missed something. Oh, okay.
And I think I'll try to go pour myself some coffee. And I think I will burn myself.
No. Remember the water temperature has been like manipulated by Cassandra because you
fucked it up
before and were incapable of using it.
I think I spill it on myself and it doesn't burn me.
All right, so I think with Nasir on board, the Valiant is able to successfully leave, and you sort of start making your way toward Eos. What's going on the ship after you leave? Is there any kind of group conversation going on?
I'm looking for Dr. Belova for a private conversation.
Okay. Where are you, Mara?
I think I'll probably, again, retreat back to the research area.
Okay.
It's going to be a lame refrain, but I think it's the most logical place for her to be.
And I like
it. And remind me, what deck is that on?
Engineering.
Are you busy at work right now? Are you distracted? If I walk into this room, are you going to notice me?
I think I'll notice you when you come in.
Okay. Yeah, then I'll walk into the room and I'll just sort of wait for you to stop what you're doing before saying anything.
Yeah, I think she'll kind of stop tapping away and look over and say, I don't know, how are you?
I'm doing well. May I borrow you for a word?
Sure.
So, John, I'd like to float something by you really quickly. Arno has been walking across the ship at random from point A to point B during travel, trying to figure out the fastest routes from one part of the ship to the other. And while doing that, has sort of been like talking to himself. John, what Arno's been trying to do is figure out where he can talk that Cassandra doesn't respond.
Oh, interesting. Let me pull up a map of the ship. Oh, you know what? You know what? Maybe it is. You know what it is, Mike, just because you've kept wanting this to be a thing.
Oh, yes. Yes. The walk in. Let's go.
It's the walk in freezer, right?
Yes. Oh, this is the happiest I've been on this entire series. Okay. I'm so happy.
All right. So I want to know what is going on with Mara as Arno leads her through the ship to the walk in freezer next to the galley.
I can't even fathom, like, I think she starts out like, oh, we're going to talk in here. Oh, no, he's walking and he's walking and he's still walking and we're going and we're going to grab some food. Nope, we're not going to grab some food. We're going to walk straight on through. And okay. Yeah, we're.
And he holds the door open to the walk-in, by the way, as if this was just any other normal door to any other normal room to have a perfectly normal conversation.
She'll just like shake her head and walk in.
And I'll close the door behind us. Dr. Belova, sorry for the short notice. This is the only room I've been able to find in the ship that grants privacy from prying ears, both of the human and AI varieties. Cassandra shouldn't be able to pick up anything we discuss here.
Okay. To your point?
Director Shaw knows that I'm investigating him.
How?
He found me investigating a drop site after he had left a missive for a contact at the Aventine Consulate.
So he is really working with them.
He's working with someone over there. He wouldn't say who. It's not abundantly clear that there's much that they can do except for pass along information. And it seems that President Lee, either implicitly or explicitly, has endorsed his behavior and knows that he sometimes works outside of the normal channels to keep the peace, as he put it.
I suppose it's not the most surprising development in the world. Of course, there have been political back channels for longer than there's been states or nations.
I think that's fair if you assume that somebody who was caught red-handed was telling the truth and not just trying to get out of the situation they were found in. Dr. Belova, I'm not sharing this information because there's anything to act on right now. I'm sharing this information here on the Valiant because I expect that on Ascension, I won't be able to speak as freely as I would like. And where we're going, I certainly wouldn't want Aventine to pick up on the conversation. I apologize that the first time we talk about my mission since you've been read in was here on the ship when I said we would never talk about it on the ship, but this is a special circumstance I'm sure you understand.
First rule of spying, break all the rules of spying. Got it. And I think she'll do like a little like salute.
That's the spirit.
Get him.
But I think she'll kind of like, her teeth are chattering a little bit, but she'll get serious and she'll say, did you reach out to your admiral about the beacon that we found?
Yes. Nemirov is a military design bureau and she's investigating further. But seeing that it came from there, Aventine's involvement is indisputable at this point.
True. I suppose once I finish my investigations with the device, we'll know exactly what they designed it to do.
Dr. Bulova, the reason I'm telling you this information now is because no one else knows that you're helping me on this investigation. And as long as Shaw doesn't know that you're helping me on this investigation, then I'm the only target. And if something should happen to me, then you're able to continue in my place.
I will continue attempting to solve this mystery and deliver a lasting peace. But I think you know I am not a member of FSOC.
We could never be so fortunate.
Well said. The Riz on Lieutenant Hines.
She blushes, and you don't know if it's the cold.
I just think I want to make it clear that coincidences are very convenient in espionage. Whether that be for finding new information or tying up loose ends. So I think you should assume if anything should happen, and I'm unable to explain why or what, that it's for the worst, and proceed as you see fit there.
Second rule of spying, there are no coincidences.
I think Arno actually chuckles at that.
I think she's going to like step in and say, it seems like you put an awful lot of work into figuring out a room in which Cassandra cannot overhear our conversation. Maybe you should have just come to the technology mastermind to invent a room in which she cannot overhear our conversation. And then, like, I think she'll, like tap her slate a little bit and flip it around and be like, the top line is, like, Cassandra override script. And then there's just, like, a lines of code. And then she'll like walk out.
Excellent.
That's the scene.
All right. Amazing.
Awesome. Okay. Stop flirting with each other through your characters. And by stop, yeah. I mean don't.
No!
Don't ever stop. Don't
That's
ever
disgusting.
Stop.
I've never done anything like that and will never do anything like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's the scene. And you two at some point presumably leave the walk-in freezer. But during the rest of this trip, is there any other conversations that we want to have? Any other scenes kind of separately or as a group?
Yeah, I think I want to find Mara in the mess hall, just like grab some food and walk over with like a bag slung over my shoulder. Lauren, if you're like eating lunch, is there anyone there?
Wild of you to like assume Mara eats. Wild.
Yes, you've been dragged to eat lunch. Who dragged you to eat lunch to ensure you ate food?
Yeah, Mara has a mini fridge in the research lab that's filled with like Huels and stuff like that. So. Mm-hmm.
I like to think that Leela makes sure
I don't
eat.
Like that you dropped. Yeah, I don't like that you dropped a brand name.
My bad.
That was unprofessional. We only drop brand names when they pay us, and so far no one's paid us.
Oops.
It's a proprietary Genesis.
Whoa! How many times has Taco Bell come up on this podcast?
Fast and Furious.
At least, more than once, if that's a finger. For
a
once.
Hush falls over the crowd.
I've been called out. No, I'm sorry. I've been called in.
Manly bands.
Right, I'm at lunch. She's sitting there. She's eating.
Manly bands. Manly she's bands. Yeah, manly Lila, hands. Lila.
Okay. This episode is just references that people aren't going to get because we cut out all of our inane bullshit. Sorry, everyone who's listening. We truly do care about you.
All right.
That's why we didn't make you listen to it the first 5 times.
So, okay. All right. So Mara's at the table.
No, I do believe that Lila drags Mara to lunch when notes that that Mara has not eaten for a few days.
So are you both there together?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Perfect. So I think I'll just join them at the table and then I'll look to Mara and just ask, since we're going to be encountering Reef Kasarik herself, I thought it prudent to ask how your reading has been going. Doctor.
Very well. Reef Kasarik is doing an interesting, I think, very modern take on balancing accelerationism and reform that I find pleasant, but I hesitate to endorse.
Why the hesitation?
Science is an inherently conservative discipline. You need ample proof, and I'm keeping my mind open.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm also glad you're here, Miss Malik. You had asked about the danger of giving Miss Sarek a microphone, and you had mentioned on Feronia skepticism at my inclination to defer to others. And so I will reach into my bag and I will pull out my copy of On Independence. This may be useful for the mission, but also speaking candidly, your confidence in your own instinct leads me to believe that you may agree with many of Miss Sarek's points. And I will actually just slide it across the table.
So I think Lila had kind of been half paying attention to the conversation and maybe just, you know, obviously she had not read the book, so didn't really know what to make of Mara's analysis. But I think she's going to kind of, I think, just be genuinely interested and kind of perk up at the fact that Nasir is handing her a book that he thinks she would be interested in. So I think she's just going to take it and then kind of open it and start to flip through it. Is there anything remarkable about this particular copy, Mo?
I think all of the pressed flowers have been removed from the copy, but I think the copy is heavily annotated. I think, like, if you look, there's different inks, you know, maybe like a material that kind of looks like it's chalk almost. But this is, it's been gone through, like, clearly been read through many times with different thoughts on it. And on the dedication page, I guess, or like what would be the dedication page, there's an inscription that says, "You still have a lot to learn, -M.
Okay. So I think as Lila is flipping through, she, and the different note annotations, are they in multiple handwritings or are they?
They're in multiple handwritings.
Okay.
I think you can see annotations that are from the same person in different inks, but I also think, like, but it's clear that this was annotated by more than one person.
Makes sense. Okay. So I think as she's flipping through, the thing that immediately catches her eye is all of the different inks. And as you said, clearly it's been read many times. But then I think when she lands on the frontispiece or wherever that inscription is, I think she's just going to stop and kind of take it in and then look up to Nasir and say, "It's clear that this is an incredibly special book. Thank you for trusting me with it."
That's what friends are for.
I think Mara's going to get super excited and she's going to be like, "Are we doing a journal club?" I think she's going to look around. Is Arno there?
No.
That wasn't very yes and of you, Mike.
Yeah.
No, and he's in his quarter still sitting in the dark.
We're a no and kind of group.
Boo. I think like kind of the light will go out of her eyes a little bit, and she'll be like, well, maybe I'll ask Lieutenant Hines later if he wants to join in our exposition into Aventine philosophy. She literally can't stop herself. She just loves, she's just a huge nerd.
I think it's a testament to the amount of respect that Leela has for Mara that she's not going to comment on that.
God, just let this woman be a goober.
To be honest, Nasir is matching her energy with like a warm and friendly smile, right? Like, I'm there. I am like, Aventine philosophy, let's do it.
I suspect your lessons on Aventine philosophy will not remain purely academic for very long. I actually was hoping to meet with both of you and Lieutenant Hines in the wardroom before we landed. I have been thinking quite a bit about our invitation, and I have some concerns I think we should all be aware of. Can we just smash cut to the wardroom?
Yeah. I think we do cut to that. And I guess, Arno, you get a message saying to come meet them. And so maybe I want to see you walking into the room, or kind of how we're getting Arno's reaction to this.
I think it's me. Before you give his reaction, I wanted to say what he's walking into, which is, I think, an animated conversation between Mara and I about like word choice and punctuation on like... in the writing.
No, it's like a The Good Place styled lesson where Nasir is like at the smart board, and Mara and Leela have their copies out, and we're like in different states of interested or following along or whatever. And then like all of the like heads rotate as Arno walks in to this scene.
Yeah, so Arno got the message and leaves his room, but decides to go down the stairs from the crew deck down to the engineering deck and come up through the elevator just to buy some more time to think. And as he gets to the door to the wardroom, he kind of just stands in front of it for a second to compose himself before walking in into whatever this is.
Interesting. I feel like this is the first kind of like pause or doubt that we've seen from Arno yet, so I think that's cool. Sorry, what were you saying, though?
I was going to say, when you come through the door, I'm going to, it's just, and that is the direct result of the Aventine Food Safety Act of 2198. And honestly spawned a lot of these moments where Aventine philosophy was originally discussed.
Fascinating. A direct line from Sinclair. Amazing.
I don't think Leela is nearly as animated, but you wouldn't expect her to be.
Arno reads the room and sees Safe Harbor next to Leela and her. just makes his way to a seat next to her.
Oh, shit.
I think I just sort of like click the board, like tap the board, and it goes clear.
Thank you, Lieutenant, for joining us. Doctor, we will, I'm sure, this will only be the first of many discussions. Thank you for coming, Lieutenant. And I will get like much more somber. I have been thinking very deeply about the circumstances of the events on Eos and our invitation by Reef Kasarik. And it seems unlikely that there was a slipshod assassination attempt on one of the most influential thinkers of Aventine separatist thought, and that there was little to no Aventine response. It seems more likely that there was intentionality in drawing us to Eos. Sarek gave an invitation that was more of a threat than an offer, and we didn't have much choice but to come. I'm also suspicious because this comes immediately after our largest breakthrough in the Lustra disappearance, with a incredibly important object that we have to leave behind. This is the first time that someone would have needed to steal something material rather than just informational. And we're being drawn away. Additionally, we're being asked to put ourselves directly into the line of fire. And while we have all demonstrated a capacity for handling that, I am suspicious that this might be an attempt to assassinate us rather than Reeve Kasarik.
I think Leela's been listening rather patiently, but at that, I think she's going to interrupt and say, do you really think we're important enough to be worth assassinating?
To the general political landscape? Absolutely not. To whomever is taking the Lustra? Absolutely.
I disagree with you there, Nasir.
How so, Lieutenant?
I think we're very important to the general political landscape. Anyone who wants peace wants to keep us alive. Anyone looking for war has a target. That's a wonderful excuse to start one.
If they really wanted to start war, couldn't they just leak the information about the Lustra disappearance?
If you knew that Lustra was disappearing and wanted to start a war, would you start using up the resource that you need to conduct that war? I think there'd be a lot of bluster. But overall, I think it would force people to be more discerning with their decisions.
Likewise, if you were manipulating the Lustra without other parties in the Verge knowing, you would want to keep that information to yourself. It might appear like you were tipping the scales in your favor, manipulating the vote.
I'm also not directly accusing Sarek. Frankly, when it comes to Aventine thought, Sarek is more akin to Evelyn Lee than to Nico Torres. I'm significantly more worried about other factions of Aventine's political landscape, namely those headed by Aiden Kyros.
So this could be a cry for help?
Yes. It's possible that it was a real assassination attempt. It's possible it was a trap. It's possible that they want to assassinate all five of us.
Do you still have those trip mines? I'm sorry, I don't know if I actually say that.
No, I would, if you say that, I'd be like, I would chuckle lightly.
I have been working with Charlie on learning to construct and deconstruct them.
So, all of this to say, we very well could be the targets of an ambush. I mean, if we're putting on our tinfoil hats, maybe someone's trying to frame us.
If they were trying to frame us, they wouldn't have waited for the opportunity to blame us first.
I think that we should leave those options open, and also the option that this is a face value botched amateur assassination attempt followed by an immediate political response. And we are simply being asked to go because Sarek didn't think we would come and thought she could use it against us. That's a possibility, but Reeve Kasarik is no amateur. And from a political standpoint, if she invited us, it's because she knew there was a chance we would be there, and that chance was just as advantageous to her as us staying away.
Well, Nasir, you're the political icon. How do we play this?
I happen to like Reeve Kasarik's writing. It seems so does Dr. Belova, and hopefully soon so will you, Miss Malik. I think we play this, as Lieutenant Hines would say, close to the chest. I think we're friendly, I think that we are a competent and thorough security detail for a prominent political figure in the Verge. And we show, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the Republic serves all the people of the Verge. And I think we are careful with everything else.
So I think after that, there's probably another half a day or so of travel. But after that, we see the Valiant drop out of FTL and begin cruising toward a planet that is orbiting a bright blue-white star. The planet has an atmosphere somewhere between red, orange, and brown, but with light streaks running through it, almost like how it looks when you first pour cream into a cup of coffee or tea. And as you approach the planet, you see over the horizon a pale sea blue moon. The moon is large by any reasonable standards, not much smaller than some of the other planets that you've visited, but is dwarfed in comparison to the giant planet that it orbits. And as the Valiant enters the atmosphere, you see that the surface of this moon is almost entirely covered in water. After a few minutes of flight, you see a series of golden reflections rising up from the ocean. As you get closer, you recognize this as Lyra, the only true city on Eos. The Valiant slowly descends towards the edge of the city, which almost looks like it's floating on the water. And the ship eventually settles onto a landing pad that juts out from the rest of the settlement, almost like a dock back on Earth. And as the lift begins to lower from the Valiant, we see a woman in a dark blue peacoat seemingly waiting for you along this pier. She has very dark, almost obsidian skin, braided hair tightly wrapped into a neat bun, and a sort of utterly neutral expression, just sort of a continuous poker face. But as the lift settles onto the ground and the four of you step off of the Valiant, she walks up to you and extends her hand. And she says, "Jocelyn Fisk, Chief Inspector with ESS. It's nice to meet you four."
"It is a pleasure to meet you, Chief Inspector. I am Nasir Baydark, and these are my colleagues, Dr. Mara Belova, Lieutenant Arno Hines, and Miss Leela Malik of the Sato Institute."
I think she kind of gives a curt nod as Nasir says each of your names, kind of recognizes each of you. But then she says, "I'm sure you saw the reports on the news, but 4 days ago, two of our inspectors were doing a routine sweep of Sarak's room before she arrived, when they found explosives strapped to the bottom of the bed. After our team deactivated the bomb, Sarak insisted that we wait for you to arrive before further investigating the scene. I have frankly no idea why an Aventine celebrity would demand the Republic's help, but we reluctantly went along with this to avoid an interplanetary incident."
Just to be clear, what alignment, like faction, does this person hold kind of allegiance to?
So I think she seems to work for the security service on the planet, okay, which I think Shaw had said the briefing is kind of like generally pro-Republic, but decided to allow Reef Kasara to give this speech.
Okay, thanks for that refresher. Yep.
Yeah, no worries. So I think then she continues and says, "In terms of the Veil, the festival, most of the music and performances begin this evening and continue through the next 2 days. And then Sarek's speech is scheduled for just an hour or so before the eclipse. I'm sure that at least some of you are going to want to check out the hotel room. And there's also the festival grounds themselves, which might be a challenge to secure. I should also add that after the bomb was discovered, the council here offered some apartments to Sarek, declared it a temporary consulate, but I understand that she's brought her own security for that as well." But as she's saying this, Arno, you see a man maybe in his late 20s clutching a small package in his left hand and quickly walking, almost running toward your group. What do you do?
I go to intercept him.
What does that look like?
Where is he coming from?
He is coming from the other end of the pier. So it's like the Valiant touched down on this sort of dock extending out into the water. And there's a narrower walkway that connects that with the rest of the settlement. And he is moving down that, sort of going toward you and the Valiant. And I think by the time you notice him, he's almost at your end of it.
Okay. I'll walk past the group. I will dash past the group. And yell, freeze!
Okay. So I think you
yell
that.
I yell that, but I don't stop moving towards him. I want to be very clear.
Okay, so I think you yell, and he almost comes, like, skidding to a halt. And I think he, like, puts his hands up and drops the thing that he was holding.
I'm going to walk towards the package. I'm going to pick it up.
I think you do that, and he says, hey, and goes to, like, grab your hand.
I'm going to try to snatch it before he can, like, grab the thing or just try to pull away.
Yeah, he says, I have a job to do. That's a delivery.
You have a job to do on a pier with a diplomatic ship here shortly after an assassination attempt, and you decided to run with a nondescript package towards the diplomatic delegation, and you didn't think that looked suspicious?
He says, I think he's kind of taken aback and just
read
says,
him for filth.
I think he just says, look, I didn't know about all that, but if you're from, and then he kind of looks down at a slate and says, the RSV Valiant, then just sign and let me go, okay? And kind of hands you the slate.
I want to look at what the what it is that he's asked me to sign. Like, I want to read it. What is on this?
Yeah. It's, I think there's just like really
read the
fine
full terms and conditions.
Yeah. The give me the fucking terms. Packing slip. This is what I crave. Inject it straight into my veins. Content. Yeah, yeah.
I think it just has like a bunch of stuff about how like, oh, you accept delivery. You disclaim any claim of damage to the package and all this kind of fine print and like delivery legalese. And then has like a big signature box.
I'm going to hand him back the slate. And I'm going to look at the package anyway to check for damages anyway before I sign to accept it.
Arno's not a moron. He won't just sign something willy-nilly.
Yeah. Yeah, you look at the package and it seems fine, even despite the drop. And it feels like there's not anything heavy inside it.
I'm going to look over at the chief inspector and say, is this normal for shipside deliveries?
I think she kind of scoffs and says, no, but I wasn't exactly expecting your reaction.
I think given the circumstances, you can understand.
I think he's just still holding out the slate for you to sign.
Inspector, I appreciate that our responses have been animated. And I actually won't shoot a look at Arno, which normally, which I think my team would notice. But given the circumstances, we're a little on edge. We're looking out for any potential threats to Miss Sarek. We want to be sure that no one is going to stop her speech or the festivities. I lived in the Verge for nearly a decade and never got a chance to witness the Veil myself. So this is a wonderful opportunity for us, despite somber circumstances.
I also think in the background, Mara's kind of strapping on her sensor. She's like, she's getting ready to sense that needs be.
So I think you say that, Nasir, and we see Mara, you strapping on the sensor. And then I think the focus shifts again. You just see the delivery guy again holding out the slate to get signed. And he's like,
I'll take it and sign it.
Okay. So you, like, walk past Arno and do that? Okay.
I mean, I assume he walks over to us rather than just standing by Arno. But, yeah, like, because I'm not going to leave Chief Inspector behind. But, like,
yeah.
I'm like,
I think if you gesture for him to come to you, he walks toward you.
So he goes, and I'm like, I'll handle that. Thank you.
Yeah. So I think you sign, and then he just says, have a good one, kind of really sarcastically, and then starts walking down the pier. And leaves the package.
This may be the best character we have ever encountered in this show so far.
I want him to be reoccurring. He just like runs an interplanetary delivery system.
Yeah, yeah.
I really want him to deliver something in the future.
Yeah. So Arno, you have the package in your hand. What do you do?
Do I want to open it? I don't know.
Oh my God.
I'm tempted to either open it right here or not open it in front of the chief inspector is the sort of the thing. And you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to open in front of the chief inspector. Let's go.
All right. So I think it has one of those like pull tabs or whatever to like open it and what, or whatever the packaging in the future is. And you pull it open and inside the package, I think this takes you back for a second because inside like that outer packaging, you see another envelope. This is a thick, very ornately designed paper. But as you're touching it, this paper has a texture that is different from anything that you have ever felt before, Arno. The color is a very deep scarlet, and written on the front of it in gold cursive script are the four of your names. What do you do?
I will take that as an invitation to open an envelope that was addressed to me.
So inside the envelope, you take out, and it's kind of folded in half, another piece of paper in the same scarlet color. And as you open it up, you see that this paper says, "Please grant us the honor of your presence at 8 o'clock this evening." And below that, it says, 370 Waterfront Terrace, Lyra, EOS 2A. Just below the address, though, the letter ends with the phrase, "Yours and my own," followed by the signature of Reeve Kasarek.
Oh, boy.